Overlooking Phoenix, from high above in the Star Worldwide Network studios, Badge Boys. Stories, insight, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. And now, here they are, the Badge Boys.
Welcome back to another edition of the Badge Boys, a show where two retired cops talk to the community. I'm retired Crime Stopper Sergeant Darren Birch.
I'm retired Phoenix Police Officer Jason Schechterly.
And each week, not each week, but most weeks, I bring in a guest, and Jason's always doting on me how I have these great guests. Jason, you knocked it out of the ballpark with this guest.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this week for a very long time. We have retired LAPD Commander Ed Prokop with us. And Darren, I have read Ed's bio. I can't even tell you how many times. And trying to find something
too much
to cut out, right? Because it's going to take that long. But of all the guests we've had, which we've had some incredible guests the last 4 years, but this gentleman deserves his due. And for all the officers out there listening and wanting to learn and be, you know, think about where your career can go, I think this is going to be a really important and fun conversation. So,
and you had me at his name, Prokop.
Prokop, I mean, really. Yeah. What are the chances?
Right? What a great guy.
He is. So before we bring, and I still have a really hard time. He gets on me about this through text and phone calls to call him Ed, but you know what? I'm a big chain of command guy. I am.
Respect, Commander.
But I will honor him and refer to him as such. But I want to introduce Ed Prokop. He is a retired Los Angeles Police Department commanding officer who commanded, now get ready for this bio, Support Services Group, 26 and a half years of service, only 26 and a half years. I mean, it's amazing how quick time goes by and what this gentleman accomplished. SSG consisted of three divisions, 1,100 personnel. In this capacity, Ed oversaw all 911 call centers. Again, we are talking about the second largest city in the United States. 10,000 calls per day, 911 calls, 5,200 police vehicles, and the largest Type 1 jail facility in the United States. His command experiences include commanding officer of special operations, which includes SWAT, K-9, the mounted unit, the dive unit.
All the fun stuff.
All the great stuff. Metropolitan Division, the Air Support Unit, Security Services Division, commander, assisting commander of counterterrorism and Special Ops Bureau.
Wow.
As a captain, Ed was the commanding officer of the Elite Special Operations Division Metropolitan, which oversaw all aspects of advanced firearms and tactical training in support of 9 platoons with over 500 officers. Again, SWAT, K-9, Dignitary Protection, which is a pretty big deal in LAPD, surveillance operations, crowd management, control, commanding officer of the Newton area, which consisted of 300 officers. He was assigned to South Los Angeles, covering 9 square miles, 180,000 residents. When he worked as a lieutenant, he was a gang impact team officer in charge of the Rampart Division, which if you don't know what that word means, then you're not doing yourself a service to learn the history of the job that we do. He was a sergeant, gang enforcement detail. And as an officer, Ed was assigned to the Southeast area, Pacific area, Operations South Bureau, Community Resources Against Hoodlums, CRASH. What a great term.
Acronym,
against,
right?
Hoodlums. I don't think we could get away with that anymore. That division probably, I'll have to ask Ed. I bet that division doesn't exist anymore because it's politically incorrect now. Ed was a Special Operations Element member for 7.5 years with Metro as a K-9 handler. Ed served in the United States Marine Corps as an infantry squad leader from 1988 to 96. He participated in Operation Desert Storm. He is also something that I just have huge envy and respect to. Works with the Office of Special Investigations for the United States Air Force. And as you know, Darren, the Air Force is the best
second
there
best,
is.
Second
no, no,
best,
yeah. The best yeah. there is. And he is with
Go
OSI, deployed in support of Operation Enduring Freedom and Inherent Resolve to Qatar and Afghanistan. Ed received his master's in public administration from Cal State Northridge, graduate of Senior Manning Institute for Police and Naval Postgraduate School Executive Leaders Program. And
wow.
he is also, geez, to finalize this, because he's probably about ready to kill me, recently retired as the Division Chief of FLETC. And again, if you don't know what FLETC is, then you're not doing anything to further your career. It's the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. And Ed was the Division Chief up until he retired a few weeks ago to focus on what he is doing now. So with all that, I will be happy to shut up and welcome Ed Prokop.
Yeah, good afternoon. So that was a little much. The first time I actually had to sit through all that stuff. Incredibly embarrassing, with great humility. So proud and thankful for the folks that you know I served with. And I just got very lucky throughout my career. And I think the best thing about all that, you know, my dad used to say, you know, whatever your title was, or, you know, he would say, hey, that and $3 will get you a cup of coffee. So all that 2 minutes doesn't matter. You still got to pay $3 for a cup of coffee. But no, thankful to be here. Thanks for the time, guys. I'm looking forward to talking with you.
You know, normally Jason has the first question, but since he brought in a guest and he has the privilege and honor of just hitting a home run, I get the first question, which is to the heart of law enforcement. Why did you raise your hand and become a police officer and serve something bigger than yourself?
Well, I think, you know, the first part, my father was a retired Connecticut state trooper. I grew up in Connecticut, a small town there. And I think, you know, just seeing him, you know, go to work every day, the police car coming home, it just was, you know, kids want to emulate their parents. And that just seemed to be a natural fit. I, you know, going through high school, I certainly wanted to, you know, be like my dad, and I wanted to help people. It was intriguing work, right? I'm not really a guy that's cut out for sitting behind a desk. You know, and I wanted to be part of a team. I think I was a terrible high school athlete. And I think that contributed to my decision, to be a part of a team that never lost again.
I was
an ice hockey player, you know, third line, you know, just about the ability of skating is about all I could do, right? You know, it wanted to win, and, you know, it never really happened. And I'm like, you know, I'm tired of this. That's one of the reasons I joined the Marine Corps as well. It's like, you know, I'm done losing. I don't want to do that anymore.
You know, I grew up in the 60s, and what I knew of LAPD was from Adam 12, or maybe even Dragnet, because I loved also the old Dragnet. Was it what you expected, you know, that first day, week, months into your rookie year?
No, I had no idea. Coming from a small town of, 1,900 people in rural Washington, Connecticut, you know, graduating my undergrad out there, coming back from Desert Storm, no one was hiring on the East Coast for officers. And then I, you know, one of my partners, when I was working as a small town sheriff in Litchfield County, he was a retired LAPD detective. And he's like, hey, why don't you go out to LA? I started reading the, you know, Union Magazine and everything. And, you know, long and the short, October of 93, I flew out there. They consolidated the training. And I was hired in December of 93. We were hiring 50, 60 folks, 80 folks a month at that time because of a federal grant. And I landed, you know, after 7 month academy in Watts in South Central Los Angeles on morning watch from 2330 to 0730. And it was, I mean, culture shock. You know, first of all, just the basics of, you know, being the big city police.
You know, that's how my career went. I had no idea what to expect because, again, I was watching TV, and it's nothing like TV.
No, not at all. And, Ed, one of the things I want to ask, and, you know, this goes to a lot of our listeners out there are either young cops or really getting into the groove of their career. And I look back on my career, and I knew from the day I went in the academy that the only thing I ever wanted to do or be was a homicide detective. And my career took just a little bit of a detour, obviously, with the line of duty injury, but I did end up retiring as a homicide detective and very proud of that. But I've noticed two things as I've gotten older and watched my friends rise up or choose specialty details. And I have a feeling that one of two things that I see kind of commingled for you. You either choose and say, you know what, I am going to go as far as I can in this career and never stop advancing, or you go somewhere that you really, really love and enjoy, and you do a great job, and they punish you by taking you out of there and putting you in charge of something else. So am I right when I say that it's probably commingling for you, or was it one or the other?
100%, yeah. So I wanted to be, as a young cop interacting with the LAPD SWAT folks. That's what I wanted to do, 100%. It's a full-time team. There's 60 folks. And that was my goal. They worked out every day. They were professional. They were scientists. They had, sound judgment, a good moral character, and just the quintessential police officers, right? That's what I wanted. Mm-hmm. The first 4 years of my career, many contacts with them, just working, South Bureau Crash, Community Resources Against Street Hoodlums. We call it gang enforcement detail now. And then I realized, hey, I actually want to go to Canine. I like that job better. It's more fluid. It's more active. The type of work is more up my alley. Watching the dog, working with the dog is extremely rewarding. So I applied. It took me, one time to get into Metro, and it took me three times to get accepted to Canine. Third time I got the go ahead, and I worked for about 5.5 years. I wanted to retire there, Jason. I wanted to be Canine One. The senior canine handler,
I love it.
But as luck would have it, right, we're not in control of our career. I had back surgery in 2003, and they were going to retire me.
Oh, wow.
With only, 10, 11 years on the job. And one of my other canine handlers, I won't mention him, he's like, you're crazy. What are you doing? You better take the sergeant's test. They're going to put a cage in your back and retire you. You get a better pension as a sergeant. So I'm like, oh, geez. Okay. I didn't know. So that's exactly what happened. I took the sergeant's test. I did well. And from there, I just continued to, take those tests every 2 years and just got lucky. I mean, again, it worked out that way. I was not set to come to the LAPD and be like, I want to run this place. I want stars and bars. I wanted to be a canine handler. And this is just the hand I was dealt. Those are the cards I was dealt.
Well, with your experience, your expertise, and just seemingly have worked every facet of, that's one of the greatest things about law enforcement, especially in the big city. There's a lot of jobs, a lot of special details. You can always find what you're interested in, what you're good at. But I would love to get your take right now, because I know you worked on a lot of big cases. You worked with some of the best that law enforcement has to offer. You probably worked with some of the worst. You don't have to mention any names, but obviously, Darren's time on, my time on, your long career, the things were a lot different now. You start when there's no body-worn cameras and your handwriting reports, and, you just had I don't want to say policing was different as far as traffic stops, the interactions, the investigation, but it's very different in the way that it's perceived and shown now to the public.
And technology.
We are really at the pendulum swing right now is so far to the wrong side, with what's going on in law enforcement, from the suicides to the ambushes to the alcoholism, domestic violence, early retirements, people with really great qualifications, would be great cops, don't want this job. So then the gene pool gets a little shallower, and we still have to fill slot. I mean, there's just so much to this, and I could go on and on. I would love to get your take on, I know this pendulum's going to swing, but the damage in the past 2.5 years is going to take probably 10 to 20 years to get back to where it needs to be. And I just would love to hear your thoughts from your experience.
Yeah, all that. I mean, I guess a funny side note. I told you my dad was a Connecticut State Trooper, and Darren, you probably appreciate this. You know, but he said, geez, it was a good job until they put radios in the cars.
Oh, I love your dad already. I love your dad already.
So true.
Yeah. So we're talking about technology and, you know, body worn dash cam, you know, all the capabilities, GPS. And, you know, the reality is, you know, I like you, Jason. Yes, damage has been done, but I have full faith and confidence in the systems. We've been here before. 60s and 70s, the pendulum's going to swing back. You know, everyone likes to bash, you know, these new younger generation, new officers. But I was pleasantly surprised at the talent in those ranks. Nice. Those young folks that are raising their right hand want to work. They embrace the technology. They came on for the same reasons. They're very good with it. We can't use our optic from, you know, the 90s. To try and judge, you know, their suitability for working in an organization. I mean, we have so many talented folks for a lot of different reasons, right? We got young kids that have 6-8 combat tours. We have folks with advanced degrees. We have professionals, extremely diverse workforce. And that's what gives us our strength. Are we going to come back? 100%. Yes. You know, it'll take in different areas of the city for a lot of different reasons, but it's going to take, you know, political leadership to identify, rectify, and, you know, lead with credibility and vision and being extremely decisive. And this will swing back. I mean, we have the greatest folks still, you know, the 1% that raised their hand to want to serve. They're still there. So the talent is still there. We can still pull this off. Yeah, times are tough. Recruitment's brutal. Retention is brutal. You know, folks are looking to do other things. But I am optimistic about it. And I have faith, you know, I've seen, I think as everyone has, to include the listeners, you know, seen the good and bad in law enforcement.
I love that. I cannot agree with you stronger. I think the paradigm shift is already there. I think it's sadly, we see these waves. This was horrific. This was a tidal wave in as far as 2020 and you know, the George Floyd. But you, I don't know how you experienced Rampart. I understand you were in control well after. But can you talk a little bit about that? When that occurred, L.A. really didn't have a black eye ever at LAPD. I mean, I grew up with the Adam 12 and you know, T.J. Hooker and all these great L.A., you know, cop stories. Hollywood was all pro-cop, if you will, at that time frame in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And then you had Rampart. Did you see any aftermath of that, and talk about that pendulum going back and fixing some wrongs, if you will?
Yeah, it was incredibly. It changed the organization. It changed policing all across the country. You know, Rampart shook our core as an organization. We lost trust and faith and confidence in the folks that we serve, but we came out of it stronger. I mean, it was a fight. It was extremely cost. The costs were significant. I think it lasted 10 or 11 years, and there were 75 paragraphs for the federal consent decree that we had to abide by. And it took almost a decade of forcing that, but we have come out of it. We've come out of the wash a lot stronger, a lot leaner, a lot better, a lot more open organization, and a more efficient way to do business. You know, the bottom line is, you know, like I said earlier, people, communities, and they change, and their expectations of the police department change as well. So we've got to change with those times, and that consent decree was our time.
That's outstanding. Ed, you and I met basically via email and phone, because you are now moving on I can hear in your voice, and I know with what you've done, especially in your last few years with LAPD and then being the division chief at FLETC, you deeply care about this career and law enforcement, and obviously you have a lot of stories to tell, which all of those make you just primed and ready to be a great public speaker. And you've joined Eagle Rise Speakers Bureau, which is led by a good friend of mine, Jason Redmond, a retired Navy SEAL. And I would just love to hear what are your desires? What are your thoughts? What are you hoping to achieve? And please end it with, how can people get a hold of you if they want to learn from you and hear your story?
I just want to stay connected with, you know, with the community, the organization. Thankful, you know, for the Redmonds for allowing me in and partner with them. What a great opportunity. And the Rolodex, and these are all blue chip players that they have there. And I feel very humbled to be a part of that. I just want to, you know, impart some of my experience. Everything in law enforcement has been experienced somewhere else. So it doesn't matter if you're in a small town in Maine, in Washington, Los Angeles, or Houston, we all do the same things. It's just a matter of exposure. You know, big cities happen to be exposed a little bit more, but we're all faced with the same challenges. You know, a couple of big things, right? Number one, don't take yourself too seriously. Admit your mistakes. Explain specifically as a leader, you know, what direction you're going to go, and talk to your people in a way that they can understand it and ground it. Don't take yourself too seriously, right? Whatever your grounding element is, if it's family, faith, workout, whatever, you've got to be balanced. You know, I need my folks, and I would tell this to them in roll call. I need you to be happy coming to work, and I need you to be going home because I need your head in the game 100%. So that's our challenge, you know, move forward. And I don't think anything's going to change. You know, technology, community engagement, none of that stuff is going to
change. And what is
as managers, as leaders.
And what is the website to get a hold of you for this for speaking engagements? Because I want to get a hold of you because I know you have some information about the Christopher Dorner investigation. I'm going to ask you to come back in 2 weeks to join our 200th episode. But for others that want to get a hold of you to hear you talk, what is the website?
It's EagleRiseSpeakers.com, or you can start following me on Instagram, EJ_Prokop, my last name, Prokop.
Fantastic. We'll be right back with more heroic headlines, stupid suspect story, and Jason's always inspirational closing message. We'll be right back.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Badge Boys. We'll be back right after this. If you like the Badge Boys, you'll love their books, starting with Burning Shield, the Jason Schechterle story, which Arizona Diamondbacks president Derek Hall proclaimed, "Jason is an inspiration, and his story must be read and shared." The professionally written novel is a powerful biography chronicling Jason's gut-wrenching battle to health after being trapped in a fireball that consumed his police car, and his high-stakes legal showdown against the Ford Motor Company for their explodingly lethal Crown Victoria police cruisers. Then there's Darren's award-winning Twisted But True book trilogy, with close to 100 compelling and funny true crime stories that American Detectives with Lieutenant Joe Kenda producer called the perfect blend of humor, heroism, and honor. And retired Colonel Dave Grossman declared, "Darren's Twisted But True books are hilarious, deep, and powerful." Each book in the series received the Pinnacle Award for the best true crime book, and a story from book two was featured on an ID Channel television show. And Robin's most recent book, Soul Stirrings, reviewed as an often humorous and spiritually uplifting story of a widow's soul-searching pilgrimage to the afterlife. Darren called it a love story, a ghost story, an investigative story. It's a story like no other. And Robin's first book, Victim No More, where she shares her harrowing experiences with rape and domestic violence as Robin takes the reader on a very personal journey through the morass of abuse and loss, and ultimately, survival. These Badge Boy books should be on everybody's top 10 reading list. You're listening to Badge Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterle. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
Welcome back, everybody. Jason, each week it seems like you always give me some nod of what a great guest I brought in. Wow. Yeah. I think you just hit a home run with this.
This is truly a phenomenal individual, and I can't wait to get to know him a little bit better and get out there on the speaking circuit with him. He's just kind of one of a kind, you know, and you know how I feel about law enforcement, you know how I feel about chain of command, and you know, it's a humbling thing when you get to talk to somebody who has been there and done it. So it was a lot of fun to have Ed on the show.
And his heart is in such a good place. I guarantee you he was a hero to many of those officers looked up to him. And speaking of heroes, you got a great heroic headline.
I do, and this is probably going to shock you because the last thing that anybody expects me to talk about is Iran.
Yes.
I would probably never have anything good to say. And I do not watch the World Cup.
Love it.
Because
I'm hooked.
And listen, I'm a huge foot. You know, I went to England and spoke to a professional football team.
Yes, I thought we got you converted.
I'm going back in March. I mean, I'm a huge, of course, we call it soccer.
But yes, we do.
Out of respect, it's football. Probably the biggest sport in the world
when it comes to the
passion of the fans. But the way that FIFA and the organization handling the World Cup, hosting the World Cup, has, you know, we in this country right now, Darren, we're hearing nonstop about things that happened here 150 years ago, and they want to bring us down and hurt us and hammer us. You know what? Slavery is actually still going on, and it's happening right there with the people who built those stadiums and made this World Cup possible, and the amount of people that died. And then you hear about what's going on in Iran right now with the protest. They just executed their first protester. Did you see that? They hung him.
I didn't see it, but yes, they hung him. I know about it.
There's something like 15,000 people that have already been incarcerated. But on the World Cup stage, I did catch on the news that Iranian star of the Iranian soccer team, Amir Nasir Azadani, he's facing execution after campaigning for women's rights and freedoms. He's a soccer star, and he did this on the world stage at the World Cup for the world to see on TV. And he did this because of the death of a 22-year-old named Mahsa Amini, which happened, I think in 2022, and it was just simply because she didn't wear enough garments to cover her hair and her head. Yeah, the moral police. But she died in police custody. Actually, it was just in September after not adhering to their very strict dress code. Launched a series of protests, and again, the regime is cracking down hard on these protesters. But this soccer star, you know, the guy, he's got a job to do.
Such bravery.
It is. He's got a job to do. He gets paid to do it. He's on the big. This only happens once every 4 years, and he took his opportunity at, you know, most of our protesters here in the United States, they're risking nothing.
They're protesting nothing.
they're just gaining their 15 minutes of fame, whether it be on Twitter or you know, the media loves them right now, or certainly our politicians love them right now. When you're actually standing up for something that you know.
True oppression.
When you go back home, that you're probably going to be executed. Your family could possibly be in danger. That takes an awful lot to do that. And so while I have no interest in supporting the regime or the politics of Iran, that is a true humanitarian crisis that's going over there. They do not have the freedoms that we enjoy. And if our country wants to rise up and say, you know what, protesting is great, and we believe in it, and you're free to do whatever you want, burn down police buildings or say whatever you want about this person, then you know what, we ought to stand up and help out people like this. We can send $100 billion to Ukraine to help fight a war. I think that, and I'm sorry to get political about this. And again, I never thought I would say that one of my heroic headlines would be somebody from Iran. But this gentleman, this soccer player, represents tens of thousands of people who just want a better life, and they don't believe in the crackdowns. And, you know, Ed said it great. Something I didn't think about, but he hit the nail on the head earlier when he said, we cannot look at something that happened 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 150 years ago, through the optics of today.
Of that time.
Well, the optics of today fully support that Iran needs to treat its citizens better. And this guy just, it's a hero to me.
I would never
have the courage to stand on a world stage and knowing that I'm probably going to die because of it and my family is at risk. And he was willing to do that. so that 100 years from now, children growing up can look back and say, that guy stood up. Like, you know, we have our Martin Luther Kings and we have our Abraham Lincolns and we have some people that we can look back on. And I'd be willing to bet this guy's name will continue through the annals of history in Iran because of what he did.
Yeah, I'm with you. And hopefully he doesn't get executed, but if he does, he is absolutely going to be a martyr for a cause greater than himself. And yes, to that end, I do watch the World Cup, and I saw the Iranian game with the U.S., and they were just played magnificently. I give them kudos, but where I really give them kudos is they refused to sing their national anthem until the first game. Then they sang because they got word that their families would be tortured if they didn't sing.
Yes.
This is bravery to an incredible level. I'm with you. Good for you talking about Iran. It's absolutely the heart of bravery. And now I'm going to take us again to the bowels of a stupid suspect story. Yeah, I'm going to make this pretty quick. In Avondale, Arizona, this is local to where we have our show, a Department of Public Safety trooper pulled over a very suspicious driver and passenger during a very busy Monday morning traffic. The trooper saw the driver in the HOV lane on the interstate and again saw a very suspicious passenger, maybe even suspicious. The trooper thought he saw a grumpy green guy in the passenger seat, and it turned out the passenger was indeed the Grinch, an inflatable Grinch. Now, DPS said while they appreciate the festive flair just in time for the holiday season, it is illegal to drive in the HOV with no other passengers. And no, not even an inflatable Grinch counts as a plus one. The driver received a citation for the HOV violation. Now, I can't help but think,
it's the most expensive ticket in the state of Arizona.
And I would have given him a break because I'm I would have because I'm not a Grinch.
You're a monster. Mr. Grinch, your heart's an empty hole. Your brain is full of spiders. You've got garlic in your soul, Mr. Grinch. I wouldn't touch you with a 39-and-a-half-foot pole.
And yes, I did that stupid suspect story just so we could play the song. So back to our inspirational closing message, Jason.
Well, this week's inspirational close is going to start off inspirational, and unfortunately, Darren, it's going to end very sadly. And this, as I talk about this today, this is breaking news, and I am going to take this moment to talk about it. Quote, one of my favorite parts of flying on a cloudy day is when the plane breaks through the clouds to reveal the beautiful day that just beyond the cloud ceiling, a great reminder for life in the vastness of the idea that everything will be all right. And if we can just know and have faith that just beyond whatever clouds are in our perceived ceilings are clear skies full of potential possibilities and promise. That quote, that paragraph was posted on Twitter 2 months ago in October by a gentleman named Stephen Voss, who is better known, well known, very famous as Twitch. Twitch is somebody that I have enjoyed and loved for more than a decade. He started off on So You Think You Can Dance. He ended up being the DJ and co-executive producer of the Ellen DeGeneres Show. Yesterday, Twitch, who was 40 years old, and Darren, if you go on back and look at his Instagram, his Twitter, his YouTube channel, all this guy did for all the years that I've watched is spread joy and love. No divisiveness, no bad words for anybody. Showed off his kids. His wife was also on the show, that dancing show. That's how they met. I just cannot even tell you how much I love this guy. And yesterday, for reasons that we may never know, he left his home without his car. He went to a hotel and he killed himself with a gun. at 40 years old. I woke up this morning to this news, and I can't even tell you how sick to my stomach I still am, and I'm just in shock. But it goes to show you that, you know, we hear this all the time with suicides. You don't know what people are going through, and mental health is a real issue. Part of me wants to be angry because this guy left his beautiful wife and three young kids behind. And you have no right to do that, first of all. But I also don't understand the pain that will get you to this point. I also am not an expert in mental health. You know, I hope whatever pain took him to that hotel and caused him to use that gun on himself, that pain is gone. But the pain and devastation that he left behind it's irreparable, and it's going to last a lifetime for so many of his fans, people who loved him, and more importantly, his children. If you are going through something out there, please, please think about those other people if you can. I know that your pain and the thoughts of suicide, they are very selfish, and again, I don't understand that pain, so I'm not saying that you have no right, but there are other people involved, so please call 988. Thank you for that.
Good for you.
Thank you for that new number that's out there. There are people who want to help you. And God, Stephen Voss, Twitch, I'm truly heartsick. And he showed 2 months ago that he had hope, and then the hope went away. So God bless all of you out there for what you are going through, but don't give up on yourselves. Don't give up on your family. And until next week, be safe and God bless.
Batch Boys. Thanks for listening to Batch Boys. Stories, insights, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Batch Boys, heard weekly and worldwide on Star Worldwide networks and all mobile devices. Batch Boys.